This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Welcome to today's ILTA podcast entitled Eureka, Effectively Using Data Mining and Analytics to Influence Decisions. Today, we have two co-moderators, and this is myself, Alisher Yildeshev. I am the Business Technology Advisory Manager in a Canadian law firm called Borden Ladin Gervais. I'm joined by my colleague, Jack Recinto, Senior Applications Director in Vetterprise PC. We're thrilled to be joined by our speaker, Paul Wilner, Data and Analytical Consultant and Statistical Analysis Instructor. Welcome, Paul. Let's dive into the first question. What should be considered when identifying data which will be useful and not pollute your mining process?
I think I'd start with the idea that this is data mining. So the idea that you're going to come across a pure data set or that you're going to design some perfect data collection is really a bit of a misnomer. It isn't going to happen. It's just like mining gold. You're going to have to sift through a lot of rock. And even when you find gold, you're going to have to clean it and shine it really nice before you can show it off and have it be useful to you. The key is to enact raw data collection and cleaning processes so that you and your organization can stand behind and defend the data you have. Process may be different for different organizations. So, for example, the medical community has a very different standard than, say, a meteorologist. Now, on the technical side of things, once you have your standards figured out, you can set up guardrails during the data collection and analytics to make life a little easier later on. So for example, take that meteorologist. If we have a data point that comes in and it says that the temperature in Alaska is 743 degrees, we know that's wrong because that is impossible. So we can set up data collection such that those data points are automatically thrown out. This sort of process would give you a head start in the analysis and keep some of the pollution out of your data. You could also try to automate some of your analysis as much as possible by using standard formulas and practices, and make sure that your own human error pollutes the data as little as possible going forward. So I think that's how I would handle keeping pollution out of the data mining process.
So that leads us to some additional questions with regards to that. Are there any standards for doing the data cleansing?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like I kind of said in my first answer to the first question, there are standards, and those may differ depending on the organization. So really, before anything gets analyzed, I think there needs to be a lot of conversations about what those standards are going to be throughout the organization. I'd like to back up a little bit, though, and say that the idea that you're going to be starting from scratch is probably never going to happen. So when you set up your standards, keep in mind you're going to be bringing in data sources from all kinds of places, not just from your organization. So essentially, I'm always amazed at how many people go out and they want to know something, let's just say some demographic information. So they'll go out, they'll do a big survey. And what people don't realize is that that data is already publicly available. So for example, the US Census, they have so much data that you wouldn't even believe. It's all free and publicly available. I recently did an analysis on broadband availability since we've all gone remote in the last year, and that's all publicly available from the FCC. Weather and climate data is available for the last 100 years. And in the state of New York, where I live, New York State has this thing called Open New York, which has basic data from all the state agencies in New York. And many universities also have research projects that are publicly available. Cornell has detailed demographics as well. And there's a 30-year study of health data from the National Longitudinal Study for Adolescent Health that has been going on for over 30 years. So really, create your own standards for your organization and then meld publicly available data to your standards to do what you really want to do, rather than start from scratch or rather than try to reinvent the wheel. That's how I would handle creating standards. And I would also say that's how I would handle melding data together to be best used for you.
That's a really great point, especially when we consider in legal, a lot of issues that we have sometimes are new matter intake with regards to the data that we pull in on that end, as well as the billing data that we have, trying to get that all together and kind of get that all cleansed up so that we can make sense out of it. So a lot of times we run into issues where sometimes the new matter intake information doesn't always gel with the accounting systems because both are kind of independently handled sometimes. And that kind of siloing actually pollutes the data mining environment. Do you have any best practices for maybe preventing that from happening?
Really, what should happen in that case is that you have to get the people from the different silos together. And this is the hard part when it comes to data mining. It's getting the right people in the room to talk through sort of those issues, right? So I think one thing that can really go a long way is you get the head of those silos in the room, and just something very simple like coming up with sort of an agreed upon identifier, like what we would call an ID variable that goes across all of the silos, right? Because then once you have that, and it's a painful process usually, because a lot of times you have to do it manually, a lot of times you have to have a lot of meetings with these people to get everyone on board, because unfortunately in many of these silos, when you're doing analytics, sometimes there's these things, they're sacred cows. It's like, well, we can't possibly change our ID variable in our data because it would mess things up. So you have to get people on board. And I think in data mining and analytics, that's sort of the skill that is underrated. I know a lot of analysts that can do a lot of technical work that are certainly better than I am. But I think a really great analyst can get those people in a room and get agreed upon certain things, like an identifier variable that will go across those silos. And once you get that, and once you get buy-in, and then even if you get two departments communicating really well together, and then as an analyst say, look, these are the fruits of the labor of these two departments. They picked an ID, and now we can meld their data together. And now I can create this really great graphic for you that helps both departments. So the other five silos, you should get on board with this, because then I can do that for you. So make it a value-added proposition, and just get the people in the room, have those negotiations. It's usually a painful part of the process. But once you get there, it's a huge payoff for any organization.
Interesting. I agree with both speakers. Speaking of here in Canada, we have, for example, we have an open government concept that pulls so much data out there that can be utilized for so many different reasons. And in terms of silos, that sounds very, very common here. And I was wondering, Paul, if you can recommend a model in terms of who should be part of that planning committee and when should those people be engaged when you start the process? What would your suggestions be?
So I think I may have kind of a strange answer to that. And my answer really is the person that's often overlooked when an organization comes up with something. So for example, many times in most organizations, there's some great new initiative that comes down from the top and everybody's excited about it. And sometimes there's a press release. But and as part of that, there's always data collection, right? And there's always evaluation of whatever the program is. But the person that's often not in the room until the end is the analysts themselves. And you need to bring them into the room first. And you need to bring them and IT in. And then we're going to come in and we're going to tell the executives and all of the kind of functional committees what we can and can't do. What we have the IT capacity for, what we can do mathematically and statistically and also graphically and from a point of visualization. They're often left out until the very end. And then, you get the call that says, hey, we need to evaluate this program. We've done no data collection for the last 3 years. What can you do for me? And it's at that point, there's not much any analyst can do for you. So I would say, bring the analysts in, the what I would say the boots on the ground, the people that are going to be doing the analytics, the people that are going to be creating your visualizations, the people that are going to be putting together your board presentations for whatever you may be doing. Bring those people in at the beginning. And then from there, bring in also, like I said, I did mention IT. You're going to want to bring those people in for the technical side of things. What software do you need? What, really data security are you going to need? That's kind of a big deal, right? We've had several hacks in recent weeks. So, especially if you're collecting personal information, you're going to want to have that security in place. And then from there, once you have those two groups in the room, then you can bring in your functional silos. And you probably do want to have some sort of project manager in there. And those people are really going to be the people that are going to be in the room. And that will start off your project in a much better place than if you come back and bring in the analysts later on.
This is a great advice, Paul. And it reinforces this intra-department collaboration that a lot of firms will benefit from. What do you think, Jack?
I agree, Alisher. I think that it's terrific, actually, and it makes a lot of sense. A lot of times, administration looks at IT as kind of like code monkeys or maybe equipment quartermasters and not a part of the actual project planning. So it's really interesting and refreshing to hear someone, you know, outside of that to kind of say, hey, you've got to bring in your data analysts and you got to bring in your IT crews to make sure that everything's being pulled in and secured properly as well as being analyzed. So Paul, do you have any examples of any successful data mining that influenced an organization for the better that you can share with us?
Sure. Two come to mind. One project that I worked on quite extensively with the university, it was called the Reverse Transfer Initiative. And in this project, we looked at community college students who had left college, left the community college, and then later transferred to a four-year college. But when they were at both colleges, they dropped out after a few years, and they never attained a degree at either college. So what we were able to do using a data analytic technique was to look at the credits that the student took at the community college. And then we were also able to look at the credits that the student took at the four-year college. And this goes back to my idea, back to the idea of if you have a common identifier, you can meld those two things together. So the student had a common identifier. We were able to de-silo that information from the two colleges, okay? And then what we were able to do was we were able to say, wow, this student has 50 credits at a community college. This student also has 30 credits from a four-year college. If we can meld those credits together in such a way that the student fulfills the degree requirements they need at the community college, we can, this is where the name of the project comes from, we can reverse transfer those credits from the four-year to the two-year, and now the student has fulfilled all the requirements they need in order to earn an associate's degree. So that's really life-changing in many ways for a lot of people. So it, first of all, it helps the community college graduation rate. So the institution really likes that because now they've graduated an additional student that they otherwise wouldn't have graduated. But in addition, could you imagine getting a phone call from your community college one day, maybe 3 years after you had dropped out, and they say, actually, you know, we've looked at this and we've figured out that you've earned an associate degree. For some people, that could be a big deal. So that project was a win for everyone, and there was really a lot of analytics that went into it to match up the students' course records at two different schools. And so, again, this is an example of where data analysis isn't just, you know, a bunch of code monkeys, okay, messing around with numbers. It can be life-changing. And that kind of brings me to my second one, which isn't really an organizational one, but it's one that we forget about. So full disclosure here, everyone, my undergraduate background is actually in meteorology. I am a meteorologist, and I hope you all realize that every day your weather forecast is a bunch of code mining every day, and you realize that it makes your life infinitely better. Every day, a bunch of meteorologists go out and they make observations from the surface, balloon observations, satellite and radar, ship observations, and they put it all into a modeling database. And I really think that it's great for humanity that a hurricane coming isn't a surprise anymore, and all of humanity is better for it.
I really love the way that you put that out there. And just to look at it from a legal perspective, a lot of ways that people are using data now, particularly in law firms, is they're looking at some of the past work that they've done. They're kind of mining out some of those specific statistics and using that to kind of start working on their pitches and putting that together so that they can start looking at the overall model on how the firm is doing and maybe how they can best start supporting some of their clients by looking at some of that data that they've collected and just looking at how they've used it in the past and start moving forward with some of those lessons learned in that particular way.
I just wanted to thank you very much to our audience for tuning into today's podcast. And I want to extend my special thanks to Paul for sharing his experience. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.